Wow, man, taking you back with a classic track right there. The early 70s, a band called Looking Glass and a song called Brandy. You're a fine girl. And right now, not about Brandy, but I can tell you that coffee has arrived in the studio. And
Brandy Weather.
That's Brandy Weather. Gavin Steinoble, the man with the coffee. We would be having a brandy probably if it wasn't Hoppus 8 on a Wednesday morning.
On a Wednesday morning.
But great to have you in the studio for a legal catch-up, Gavin, and a look at the week that was. We do this on a regular basis, on a Wednesday normally here on Radio Life and Style. Gavin flies in from his offices down in the Lower Bolito Village at Klopperus Inc. and gives us an informed perspective on what's been happening on the local market scene, property scene, life in general. And last time we chatted, we were eyeing the possibility, the strong possibility of a rates increase, Gavin, and it looks like, mercifully, that didn't happen.
We dodged that bullet, and I must say, there's nothing that depresses the property market quicker than successive interest rate hikes, because people obviously don't want to commit to bond repayments if they don't know what that whether that's going to be an ever escalating amount as the interest rates go up. But the Reserve Bank, I was quite surprised, but they held the interest rates where they were, which is great for the market. It just shows, and I think, you know, remember when we discussed this a few weeks ago, the Reserve Bank has sort of set the target of 3% for interest, and we came in at around 5 now, but it's still, given the first quarter, we're still looking to average around 4. So there was no panic. And I think something else that's affected it in a big way is we've seen quite a lot of demand for our rands, because mineral sales have gone through the roof, and so has tourism. We're actually exceeding at the moment our pre-COVID tourism.
Wow, is that the first time since
COVID? The first time we've broken through, and that was in May. So what you've got is you've got a lot of people who need rands. Obviously, they're coming in, they buy rands, or they're buying our minerals, they buy rands, and then the demand for rands goes up, and obviously that strengthens the rand relative to other. And so a stronger rand will also mean, when we're importing things like fuel and so forth, that we can, it's less expensive in rand terms.
Get more bang for your buck.
And that puts a little bit of a break on inflation. So I think just they looked at the bigger picture and said, look, there's no need at this moment to panic about inflation, and probably more interested in just keeping things as they are and seeing the market bounce back. And it is rallying nicely, and it's a good time to be in property. There's a lot going on, you know.
Man, well, that's news that was gratefully received, and even a lot of top analysts and fund managers being caught off guard with that pleasant surprise.
Yeah. Good news. You never know when you're going to get it.
Yeah. Just grab it when you can. And looking at how things are rolling on the local property market, buoyant as ever. And from what's moving across your desk, Gavin, are you feeling optimistic? Here we are already at the end of July. Can you believe it? Heading into this next slice of the year.
Yeah, the first quarter is always a nervy time, because it includes January, which is traditionally a very quiet period, because people have just come back from spending on their annual Christmas holiday, and nobody's feeling that flush and optimistic, and you're just trying to get back to work and get on with things. And then sort of February, it starts to rally slightly, and so we've seen it, and it's been a very positive move in terms of the trend is still upwards. There's obviously, we've got the benefit of a lot of great new products coming into the Bolito market with all the various estates that are being established. And so all of that sort of, buoys the market up. And, at the moment, this is, again, that bubble, you know, that we seem to be in a bubble that's, that relative to, adjacent towns and cities, we're doing very, very well. So that's a good sign, and long may it last. And then obviously these macroeconomic things we just spoke about have also bode well for us. And, you know, with this increase in tourism, there's also an increase in foreigners purchasing property in South Africa
as a
viable option to spend a portion of the year here, rather than, for example, in the winter of Europe or so forth. So, and even it's just getting such great value.
You see
that It's very attractive.
And Gavin's a good advert for the North Coast lifestyle. he strikes the right balance. He's got a work hard, play hard kind of mentality. And when it comes to getting out and about, you've got some pearls of wisdom and some nuggets to impart. If anyone is looking for a good single track, possibly to do a ride on a two-wheel
motorcycle
vehicle or a fly fishing spot, you're an avid fly fisherman, and something I was wondering about, just because this kind of weather, this sort of cold snaps, sort of makes me think of, I don't know, heading to the berg, lighting a fire. Is there a particular fly that you are leaning towards these days when you do make your way up to the highlands?
That's a good question. I'm quite into the fly tying, and I attend the Explorer fly fishing I did last night, and they teach you new flies and so
really?
Forth. And
yeah. How did I know?
And look, we can go into the weeds, as it were, on flies, but if you're not a regular fisherman, I think your standard woolly bugger in olive is the thing to throw out there and retrieve it relatively swiftly, and you might trigger some chase from a trout.
Yeah.
That's sort of the easiest way to approach the sport. If you're going to start doing things like nymphing and so forth, that's different. You're actually physically trying to imitate an insect.
The movement of
it. So your pattern must resemble it, and the movements must resemble it. But if you're just stripping off something like a woolly bugger or any kind of streamer, it basically needs to look like something darting past the fish and triggers a response, and the fish goes for it in a predatory or aggressive way.
I don't know if there's an analogy between that and the property market, but probably there is. But I love the names of flies, and you can register, you can create a fly, and you can register it, can't you? You can come up with a name.
I think what happens is you might create a fly that's particularly effective, and gets copied, and then they, you know, just as a matter of deference, they'll mention the fact that this is Gavin's killer or something like that.
I think you should start a. You should go for the legal route. Get the IP protected. Get it patented.
Your flying.
Follow.
Yeah, I think fishermen aren't really proprietary about their knowledge. You're always happy to help each other and advise each other. And if something works, you go, well, this really worked last weekend, so why don't you try it as well?
Well, I'll tell you what, when you do hit on another winner that you've kind of constructed of your own device, I was thinking of a name that might stick, might be a good, and it might be sort of on brand for you. And it's a legal name, legal term that I came across, someone mentioned it the other day, and I thought, wow, what does that actually mean? And maybe you can shine some light on it. Footstoots.
The footstoots fly.
That'd be a great fly.
It's like a frankenfly, you know. It wasn't properly tied. It's half falling apart, and it's a footstoots fly.
But what does that term actually mean? When you talk about property, when you talk about buying something, footstoots, what is the legal definition?
You know, our laws Roman Dutch. So right from Roman times, if you sold something, for example, let's just say I sell you a donkey, and the donkey goes down the day after I deliver it to you with, for example, Billery or something. Everybody knows that the donkey would have had to have been infected at the time that you bought it. So it was defective.
So I've sold you
a lemon, and so in law I can come back to you. You can come back to me and say, look, this donkey that I bought from you was already sick, and it died like the morning after you brought it here. And so I want my money back, and you would be entitled to because you were sold something defective.
Aha.
Now, a lot of things get sold where both parties know they are defective.
Like full disclosure.
Yeah, well, you know, for example, if I'm selling something really old, like an old typewriter or something that's quite obviously not as good as it was on the day it was made, or a home that's 30 years old, and
both you and I know this needs some work.
Yeah. Well, you're not exactly buying a new one, and so the price isn't the price of a new one. But I want to guard against the fact that you don't buy it cheaply from me because we both know it's not perfect. And then come afterwards and say, well, Gavin, it's not perfect, so I want some of my money back, you know. Well, I want the price reduced. And so it's basically and it comes from the Dutch, which is middenvoetestooten, which means that the thing you're selling, you don't have the same regard as you have something that I'd hand you. I kind of push it across to you
with my foot
and say, look, this thing's not perfect, but off you go. And I'll sell it. You must agree to buy it at a price, and it's not going to be the price of a new one or a perfect one. So
there's like a little, it's a legal provision.
Yes,
it's like all defects included.
So when you're dealing with, you know, other than a newly built house, all homes over time, you know, they have their issues that arise. Sometimes issues of a non-material nature, or, you know, it needs a coat of paint. Sometimes there are problems, like it's got a room that's prone to damp, or all the door latches aren't perfect, or, you know, the built-in cupboards are old, and some of the drawers stick, or whatever. You know, you're sitting now with a house that's not brand new. Obviously, somebody buying it is not going to pay the same price for that house than they would, for example, a newly built modern house in a new development. So this allows the seller to say, look, you know, I'm selling you this property footstools as it is, with its defects. There are defects, you know. The deck is 15 years old, you know, and there's some planks that need replacing, or you're going to have to do some work.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you know that when you make an offer, and you've kind of factored that in, you've said, okay, well, it's going to cost me $40,000 to do the deck again, and it's going to cost me this to fix the garden and the fence that's falling over, and so forth and so forth. And you've done your maths and you've gone, well, a house brand new of this price would be $6 million, but I'm going to spend $400,000 here, so I'll offer you 5.6, and that's how it works. And that way I can offload the property without you coming back at me for these things that we both know are wrong, and you're paying less, so we can meet. There's a meeting of the minds, and it all works very well. Without foot stewards, that couldn't happen, because I'd have to fix it up perfectly before I go to market, and you'd pay a lot more than maybe you can afford. Because some people do like to buy something cheaply and then fix it and then sell it at a profit. So that allows that entire thing to happen. Now, the footstools clause will protect a seller, because you can say, well, buyer comes back and says, oh, guy, you know, I've just realized this probably is not quite what I thought it was, and there's this issue and that issue and so forth. And your seller will say, well, you know, I did sell it to footstools. So when I said footstools, you knew you have to check.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just go, well, it looks great, I'll take it footstools, and then do your real investigation, your real inspection after you've moved in. But this happens more often than not, because people look at property when they're buying it in a more rosy way. They can imagine themselves living there. That's romantic. This is where the dog's going to run around. That's where the kids are going to play. And you don't necessarily do your proper investigation. Then afterwards you discover, well, oh, I didn't notice this and I didn't notice that. And you won't really be able to say to the seller, fix this or fix that, because the seller told you you're buying it in its state that it was. Now, a footstools clause isn't always going to protect a seller. And where it doesn't protect a seller is if a seller knew of a defect, okay? The defect must be material. It must be serious,
yeah.
You know? And concealed it in some way from the buyer.
Ooh, okay.
In such a way that he couldn't, on investigation of the property, have discovered it.
So if there was deliberate
so that's actually
covering
a species of fraud. You're deceiving somebody into buying something, paying too much for it, and taking it off your hands with a defect that he didn't know about. All right, so do you have a duty to point out every defect? No. But if there's a defect that you know the buyer could not discover himself. For example, we did a matter a few years ago where the foundation had cracked in the lounge of a home.
Oh, that's a serious structural issue.
So something bad had happened and there's a crack in the lounge floor. What the seller did is he simply carpeted over it and kind of leveled it out, but this was an ongoing problem, and he didn't tell the buyer. The buyer bought this building with a massive crack down the middle of it, and it wasn't long and he felt under the carpet and there was starting to be a bigger and bigger difference in the level of the floor in the middle of the lounge. So he realized there's a problem, got a civil engineer in, and the civil engineer said to him, Oh, no, I know about this because a guy got a quote from me 2 years ago to fix it, and it was about 400,000 Rand or whatever. And he decided he's not going to go with it. He'd rather sell the building to some fool.
Oh, oh my word.
So that seller was in the soup because what could the buyer prove? One, that he knew of the defect and he didn't tell the buyer. Two, that he concealed it from him by carpeting it over and doing a little bit of leveling.
Wow.
And so
it's kind of a textbook case.
A textbook case. They're not always it's not always clear cut as that, but that's a clear cut example. You know, sometimes the seller denies having known about something. You know, damp is often a thing that's concealed. You know, where you in winter scrape off the bad plaster, prime it, paint it, and nobody's any wiser as to that there's a damp issue in that room, and then obviously. Come December, your buyer takes transfer, you get lots of rain, and suddenly you've got damp again, and the seller didn't tell him about it and concealed it by painting over it. So these are the sort of these are the basic rules of the game. You know, footstoots is a great thing. You should be able to sell something footstoots, because when you part with something like a car, for instance, or a house or whatever that's not brand new, you don't want, it's like a divorce, you want a clean break, you don't want that asset to keep coming back at you and saying, well, fix this and fix that, and there's a problem here and a rattle there. So
you got to understand how to play the game.
Yes, and you must understand as a buyer, it's very important as a buyer that if you're buying something footstoots, that you make a proper examination, because if you don't, the court's not going to help you, because you know you must go through the building then with properly and make sure you're happy with the condition that it's in, because that's a condition you're buying it in.
You do well then to actually get the services of a proper inspector to come in.
Yeah, I've got mixed feelings about that, because you know, they obviously also need to protect themselves, where they can't have something come up out of the blue, and so they tend to be fairly severe with their assessments of properties, and
maybe a bit too.
Yeah. But in any event, yes, they do play a role, and I think if you are buying something that you suspect could be problematic, that would be a good avenue. The idea of footstoots is a good idea, and it really does work. Just on that, if an estate agent sells a property, the under the Property Practitioners Act, the estate agent has to give the seller a property condition report, and it's got a couple of standard questions like, you know, are there any structural problems, blah, 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 blah. Are there plans, so forth, is the building regular and so forth. And the seller will have to tick yes, no, or I don't know on those. And then you kind of got the seller's now making a declaration as to the condition of his property. That has to be given to the buyer before he signs a sale agreement.
And it's part of the sort of legal...
Only if there's an estate agent. If I sell to you, we don't need to do that. And then that property condition report is almost like a memorandum of what was and wasn't disclosed.
Oh.
So if you get to a situation where the seller says, but I did tell you... And the buyer says, you never told me about this.
Pull out that thing.
Pull it out and go, well, these are the things you told me. And now we know what you told me and what you didn't tell me. Because if it's not on there, you didn't tell me. So,
what is that lovely Latin phrase? Caveat emptor.
Caveat emptor. Beware. Beware.
Buyer beware. You've been warned. And if you're looking for someone who really understands the intricacies of the legal game and who can help you out of a bind if you are finding yourself in one, or if you're expecting potentially to encounter the need for some solid legal advice, Gavin Steinable, you're getting the picture. He knows what he's talking about. You'll find him at Kloppers Inc. down in the Lower Ballito Village. Gavin, what's the best way for a listener to get in touch?
Yeah, we're down in the Ballito Village in the Ballito Center, sort of behind the building that Mozambique's in. And we're on the ground floor, big red signs. You can't really miss us. And otherwise, just Google Kloppers Inc. and you'll see our various branches in Cape Town, in Durban, Richards Bay, Mpungeni, and here.
Hey, and on a Wednesday on the radio, with coffee in hand, you'll catch another edition of Gavin, same time next week. Just don't get him started on fly fishing. Gavin, thanks, man.
Excellent.
Footstoots.